podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Oh, it's a goal. Who got the assist?
Hello, so here we are again. Yet another double game week goes by, and we're back with yet another quick turnaround edition. We need to come up with some more imaginative names than this, don't we, for these things. But anyway, Nick, you all right?
Hey, Tom. Yeah, I'm all right, thank you. We're back to the original double act today, because there's no Stag. He's going to be off for the next month for exams, so you won't be getting that positive tension and debate between Tom and Anthony that you usually get. But it's business as usual. Otherwise, we are, of course, Who Got the Assist. Make sure to give us a follow on Twitter. For Tom, it's at WGTA underscore FPL. Myself, at WGTA underscore Nick. And Anthony is at FPL Stag. And also make sure to give us a follow on Instagram if you haven't already. It's WGTA.FPL. So Tom, what's on the pod today?
Yep, so as mentioned, it's a short one. While I still remember what happened, basically, as I said, a short episode this time, answering all the on-the-button questions that have come from the community after this mini-double game week with Man City's game just finishing before we started recording today. Correspondence will return next week, despite no Anthony. But first, let's get into the game reviews and the market forces. I think that I'm first here, aren't I, Nick, in terms of the game reviews? This game was a bit of a strange one. I'm trying to be heroic in an age of mediocrity. I'm trying to be heroic. It's all around me, my crap history. So I try to make punty captains to remove my misery. But the outcomes, they are lukewarm. Nothing ever really touches me. Moves me, really. Yeah, I captained Antonio this week, and that kind of basically meant I didn't move anywhere. I got 68 points. No Rudiger meant I got Konsa off the bench for a clean sheet. And basically, there are returns all across the pitch for me, except for my captain. A little bit frustrated, because if I hadn't done the move, I probably would have captained Kane, who did obviously get the 19, and I'd have kept Calvert-Lewin. But as it was, I mean, I was pretty fixated early on in taking a bit of a risk in terms of captaining Antonio. It didn't work out, but I mean, I bet against the house, and I've lost again, but a very, very small red arrow. I think like a 2K, 3K red arrow from the 68 this week. So I'll take that and move forward. How about you, Nick? How have you done?
I've also ended up on a tiny red arrow, which is a bit annoying. It was looking like a green arrow until City went on a little bit of a scoring spree at the end of the game. But yeah, made a few wrong turns this week. I sold Luke Shaw for Cancelo. And even though I wasn't planning on starting Shaw, it just felt like a bit of disaster. Felt like a little bit like eating glass, really, with a sort of a 13-point swing, that particular move. And just in general, my whole defence is a bit shaky right now. So Cancelo, Stones and Dallas all got 1 point each, which is about as dreadful as it comes, especially considering two of those players actually had double game weeks this week. So a bit disappointing. I benched Konsa for his clean sheet as well. And Rudiger was on the bench but didn't even play anyway. So I've got a few concerns in terms of my defence right now with the rotation. The midfield, though, was okay. Gundogan, at least he managed to score and not make it a captain blank this week. Fernandes, obviously, he delivered as well to the chagrin of Sellers. And Tom picked up an assist, but I guess it was Harry Kane. As you mentioned, Harry Kane, he was the hero of the game week. He was the bluest light with a 19-point return. A little bit of a solo effort, really, in terms of his effort towards the return. But yeah, small red, very small red, ultimately. But I'm kind of glad just to tread water, really, after still a little bit scarred from that almighty collapse in game week 24. So not too bad, I guess. Shall we move on swiftly then to market forces?
Yeah, and obviously the game week's just finished is our usual caveat these days when we're doing a podcast. But I guess, as you said, the heroes of the game week, Harry Kane and Gareth Bale, who we'll be speaking about just later on, are the two guys who are dominating the transfers in, aren't they?
Yeah, so Gareth and Harry are coming in after causing trouble for the Palace. 290,000 transfers in for both of them at this current moment in time. So it's sort of an even split in terms of who's coming in. And, they both scored the brace, didn't they? Both looking like viable assets. Obviously, a lot more people already own Harry Kane, whilst Gareth Bale, he's kind of new to the radar. So, yeah, we've got a few questions on the Spurs guys a little bit later in the pod. Otherwise, apart from those guys, it was a bit strange, actually, in terms of who's being transferred in. A few surprising names. So Mason Mount's actually the third most transferred in player right now, 177,000 transfers in, which is a little bit odd, I guess, because he didn't even play in the last game. He played 24 minutes, came off the bench, didn't he? Got subject to a little bit of rotation there, and Chelsea seems like a lot of rotation going on in general. And Chelsea, of course, don't have a fixture in 29 as well. So I haven't really got my head around that particular move, why it's so popular. I don't know if you've got any ideas why so many people bringing in Mason Mount at all.
Well, I guess it's just injuries, isn't it? So Grealish, Barnes and Madison are all featuring in the transfers out column. And I guess Mason Mount is kind of, you know, within that price range, somewhere around it. He's got a decent fixture up next in Leeds. But I don't know, it does very much seem like a transfer of convenience for some people. Like 180,000 managers making a transfer at this stage of the season. As you say, maybe there's something there that we've missed. I will speak about Mount a little bit as well, as I think he is a decent option going forward. So maybe people are kind of front-loading their 180,000 wily souls here. But yeah, I was surprised to see him in third, that's for sure.
Yeah, he's only 7 million and he did score against Liverpool in game week 26, got an 11-point return there. So might be still in a few people's memories, that particular one. And otherwise, it's Luke Shaw and Richarlison also leading the way in terms of the transfers in. So 95,000 transfers in for Luke Shaw and about 88,000 transfers in for Richarlison, time of recording. Again, they both got nice fixtures for next week, West Ham for sure. And he's just got 14-point returns, I understand that. And then Richarlison's got a very nice plum home game against Burnley. And he's got 4 goals in 5 as well. So starting to gather a little bit of form there. But of course, it's a bit of a one-week pump because they don't have a game in 29. I guess some of these managers are only looking at the next week. Or maybe they've got their free hits, who knows. But the players in retrograde, as you mentioned, the injured guys, Barnes, Madison, Grealish, and also Danny Ings, who's been through the ringer recently, got himself injured, only just got 1 point in that double. And Mo Salah, he's the most transferred out player right now, 230,000 transfers out for him. He's blanked 4 games in a row, and the club in general seem a little bit of disarray. So I guess many managers jumping ship there.
Yeah, I'm not too surprised by any of those, really. I think it's just, as I said, the injuries which are causing movements in the market. I'm interested to see as well Calvert-Lewin and Vardy showing up in the top 10 of transfers out. I guess those people are, as you say, moving on to Richarlison, but I'm just perplexed by people making striker transfers at the moment, because as we'll come on to in a little bit, the strikers is such a strange spot, isn't it? And very, very strange sort of set of transfers that are coming in outside of the obvious ones, that's for sure. Right, shall we move on to the questions then this week? The first one is quite a topical one, I think, at the moment, especially for me, which is climb help. So our friend David, aka FPL Elf, or at Elf FPL, source it out, bro, get the right way around, says, I'm close out of ideas as to how to rank climb. Rather than looking at underlying stats, how's about guessing in players that have historically been capable of hauls? So he asked us to look at Mane, Vardy and Aubameyang. He says, you know, these guys are out of favour of FPL Twitter, so maybe they're going to be interesting. Premium differentials, what do you reckon? And linked to this, FPL Banger asks if we should be more aggressive with transfers as the season winds down. He says it was the case with Bale, that most of us waited for a few weeks just to see if results were going to come in first. Maybe we shouldn't be doing that. Maybe we should be jumping on early. He says he wants Kai Havertz, for example, which is, Nick screwing his face off of that. So I'm guessing that's not one we're going to be endorsing. But I think it's definitely, you know, getting to that point where you should start. If you aren't, I'm not in the position I want to be, where you've got to start looking at different sort of areas. So as you heard this week, I've tried to start taking risks to jolt up my OR with Antonio as the captain. But the outcome of that, if it doesn't go your way, is it really feels like talons raking the side of your face rather than making things better. I can't help but feel I was on the right path, though. Like, if I captain Kane instead this week, totally different story. It's a really frustrating sort of near miss that's left me with a lot of tension this week. But hopefully I can make that into positive tension and score big on the weekend. But yeah, I mean, I'm looking to take risks for captaincy as a conduit for rank climbing. I don't think it's quite time in terms of, you know, selling off the big differentials to sell off the family jewels and start buying NFTs. But I do think it's time, to some extent, as Banger says, to start making calculated risks, assessing what your appetite can take week to week. I mean, Nick, in terms of just climbing in general, before we get in some of these sort of characters, like, what do you think? What are you aiming to do over the next few weeks? Are you aiming to just consolidate and kind of make kind of small marginal gains as you tend to do, or are you moving out into more sort of risky territory, perhaps?
You probably know my character. I'm probably not looking to make too many gambles, too many dodgy decisions. I'm probably going to be sticking with some of the key men that have been reliable over the course of the season, the old reliable, so to speak. But I am actually relatively interested in Gareth Bale. as an option. So, you know, chasing these differentials, it can go a couple of ways, really. You've got players like Bale, who has basically been anonymous for the entire season, hasn't he? He's done nothing at all up until the last five game weeks. So,
yeah,
so Bale's
come
now
to life,
got,
hasn't he? Yeah.
He really has. So Bale's got 4 goals and 2 assists in the last three game weeks, one of them obviously being a double. And yeah, compliments to those managers who targeted him. And the turning form has been great to see. But yeah, I mean, it was just a month ago, everyone was saying this guy's finished as a footballer. You know, his career's over. He's never going to be the Gareth Bale that we all knew and loved from about sort of 6 years ago, I guess it was now when he was playing for Spurs. And but those recent metrics up for Bale are actually pretty impressive. So it's been 19 goal attempts and 8 shots on target for which he scored those 5 goals. So he's been pretty clinical. But actually, as I said, you know, 12 of those goal attempts have actually just come in the last 5 games. So previous to that, he was an FPL irrelevancy. And you know, it was too big a gamble for me to kind of take a risk on someone like Gareth Bale, as much as I'd love to take a punt on him a few weeks back. It's just, it didn't fit in within my risk profile. I kind of preferred the safer picks. And I'd say the same for Havertz. You know, we enjoyed him in the, when we did a bit of fancy Bundesliga last summer, but you know, I wouldn't touch him until I'd seen back-to-back hauls perhaps, and especially with the sort of the heavy rotation and the, you know, the amount of players that Thomas Tuchel's got to work with at Chelsea, I'd probably say it's an avoid still for me, that particular one.
Yeah, I think with all of these players, you're kind of, as you've kind of inferred, you've got one side where you're looking to buy in once he's shown a bit of form. On the other side, you want to be the person driving the train Hindu monkey style rather than just riding it as a passenger. And I think that that's kind of what keys into the question that Dave was asking as well. You know, he's, I guess it's with Salah looking vulnerable as the cash release. He did do a goal in the Champions League tonight, of course. I guess observing the herd and finding ways to differentiate has to be an avenue now for people, and find those players who provide feasible alternatives, be it captains, I've said, or in transfers. You know, those ones who are ignored, can they function as different drugs in your FPL team to repel you up the rankings, I guess, in a good way. So I guess, you know, Nick's mentioned Bale, and I think that that could be interesting. I mean, Nick, before I move on to Mane, Vardy and co, like, would you look at the triple up with Spurs, Son, Kane and Bale? Because a lot of people are now looking at that thinking, oh, you know, Salah to Bale, one guy's out of form, one guy's in form, whatever form means, I'm going to do that. I mean, would you be thinking the triple up is viable now?
Only in the very short term, just because of game week 29, which is a week where we don't have any fixtures for Liverpool, we don't have any fixtures for United, don't have fixtures for City. So there's an absence of premiums for that particular game week. And we do have a specific question on game week 29. But with that in mind, I am strongly considering the triple up on Spurs, Bale, Son, Kane. But then I'll probably start to remove them. And I think Son might even be the first to go out of those guys. And it might just be Kane that's kind of the one that I stick with. He's the main man. He's been in the best form over the course of the season. So I am very strongly considering the triple up on Spurs, risky strategy as a Spurs fan myself, but it will probably only be for a couple of weeks, if anything at all.
Yeah, I think that on Sunday, I definitely felt like Kane was the one, obviously, to keep, and Bale obviously jumped ahead of Son in the queue. But I guess a lot of it, as I said, is down to if you do sell a heavy hitter like Salah, or as we saw this week, people selling off Bruno, which leads us to the three amigos, or the three underlooked at amigos that Dave mentioned, which I think is just worth focusing on, because obviously we look at all the popular players, these three guys, Mane, Vardy, and now Aubameyang slightly breaking into the template. But these three guys are kind of ones who are kind of quite silent, but could well turn out to be decent picks. So what I did was I had a look at these three players, basically game week 127 last year compared to 127 this year. Starting with Mane, 5% owned, so a real differential. Again, scored tonight in Champions League. Last season, he'd scored 42 points more by this point in the season. He'd scored 5 more goals and got 1 more assist. But data is actually very similar. And that could be a sign that Mane, he's not dead. He's just sleeping. His XG is 11 versus 10, similar number of shots in the box, similar number of shots on target, and he's had more touches in the box this season than he did last season at the same time. The difference, I guess, is that ineffable thing of confidence. I'm not going to say form, but that thing that when you watch Liverpool play, you just think something's not quite right. You know, the conversion rate, there's something that's not connecting at the moment, that they're not scoring the goals. But Liverpool's running is pretty decent. And as I said, the guy's just 5% owned. Game week 30, Arsenal 31, 32, 33. From game week 30 to the end of the season, they only play Arsenal game week 30 and Man United in game week 34. The rest of those games are eminently winnable, I think. And you know, Jota as well should perhaps come into the picture. He had lots of good chances to snipe Champions League. I mean, if they look better, Liverpool, Nick, surely it's a case that you would perhaps, you know, be considering jumping on one of them if you don't own them at all. I'm considering, for example, keeping Salah one more week, seeing what happens. But I mean, could a low owned Liverpool attacker like Mane or Jota be on your radar?
Yeah, I think possibly Jota would be the one I would target just because of price. You know, he's been injured as for the last period of time when Liverpool have sort of gone through their woeful run. And just before he got injured, he was looking in excellent form. I think he scored about four goals in five games where he started. So he was looking really, really good there. And then obviously he was unfortunately injured all the way from 12 to 26. And he's back now. And he might be the spark that Liverpool need to get back on a run of form. I mean, he's only 6.6 million. He could easily fit in. With Sadio Mane, he cost me 11.8 million. And, you know, everyone's selling Salah, but it seems daft to sell Salah to bring in Mane because, Mane's been in dreadful form as well. He's been absolutely rubbish. I know, as you said, they both scored tonight, which might mean a change in fortunes for them. But he's been dreadful in the league. He scored in game week 20 against Spurs. After that, he's blanked in every single game and he blanked before for four games in a row before that game week 20 game as well. So owning Mane is kind of just like owning Salah, but without the penalties almost.
Yeah, I mean, I know what you're saying about Mane. I mean, Mane was always the guy who he didn't ever have the kind of a stats profile that Salah did, but he relied on that sort of conversion, didn't he? He didn't have that many chances, but he was able to finish them effectively. And with that dried up, there's not too much, as you say, to commend him to us. But yeah, Aubameyang is probably the other midfielder I would posit as being worth looking at. Obviously, there are a few cheaper ones, which we're going to speak about in a little bit. But Aubameyang, of the ones that FPL Elf mentioned, is the one on the list. Just 8% owned at the moment, after being 40% owned in game week one. Wow, remember those days. So up 27 last year, when he was playing as a striker, and remember making him to midfielder was meant to be such a good thing we couldn't think straight. Well, basically, last year compared to this year, up to game 27, last year he scored 49 more points, 8 more goals, he got 2 more assists, had an XG of 11.65 versus 7.77 for this season. He had almost double the number of big chances and had almost 10 more shots in the box and almost 20 more shots overall. Right, so yeah, it's not been very good this season thus far for Aubameyang, but I would nominate him as being the most interesting midfielder in the premium category out of him and Mane, just because, I mean, I know Kevin De Bruyne has come to light tonight and we'll speak about City in a little bit too, but Aubameyang, over the last five, when he's been, again, redeployed in that striker role, the central striker role, not the inside forward on the left, his XG has crept up to 0.76 per game, which is higher than 0.5 he was averaging before. He's averaging just over one big chance per game and 3 shots in the box per game, again, exceeding a season average by a third. Nick mentioned he's got a good game in 29. I've seen a few anxieties about his rotation and this modern love with regards to incessant, yeah, he could be rested about players, is becoming a real pet peeve of mine. It's such a lazy point, isn't it? But our best chance of a good season appears to be in the UEL, I understand that. But the facts are that he's naturally fit, he's played Christmases and project restarts galore without needing a rest, and he missed out primarily because of family ill health recently, rather than him being unfit. So I wouldn't be too worried about owning him. And if it was a case of looking at him, Mane, or maybe a KDB, if I haven't got a City slot for the next few, I'd probably be looking at Aubameyang. I'm probably going to keep Salah this week, but I'd definitely be looking at Aubameyang from Game Week 29 onwards, because I think that's probably the one who's worth bringing in. Now, FPL Elf did mention Vardy. I think it's worth kind of linking this in with strikers out of fashion. So Luke Thomas at us, amongst others, asking, is it weird that he'd rather have two more defenders and lose two striker slots? Is the position dead? Just look at Vardy, who's, apart from Kane, the other sort of obvious premium striker in the mix at the moment. 20% owned at the moment. But year on year, he had 33 points, more points sent on last season. He had 5 more goals, 3 fewer assists. So he's creating more this year. We had a slightly higher XG last year, load more big chances, more shots in the box, etc., etc. And Leicester just aren't looking good, are they, Nick? Without the likes of Maddison, I'm not too sure I'd be interested in him. I mean, he's just been a perpetual disappointment, hasn't he? Especially compared to that hot streak last year.
With Jamie Vardy, he's just one of those players that defies the stats. You know, it's kind of like a case of ignore him at your peril because he will punish you. And with the Sheffield United game at home, it could easily be time for Jamie Vardy to strike back. So if you're fancying a little bit of a differential punt for this particular week, for whatever reason, why not get someone in like Vardy? He was adamant at the beginning of the season. He did really well for me. I know you've owned him in patches. He's done all right. He's not been in great form. Leicester in general are struggling a little bit because of the injuries to two of their key men, Maddison and Barnes, but it just makes Vardy, I guess, more of a focal point for the team, really, because I think Barnes was hogging a few of the shots anyway, which was making Vardy more of a peripheral character in a few of their recent games. So he'll still be getting a few forward balls from the likes of Brighton and Tielemann. So I'm not too concerned about his lack of chances. And also, he's one of those players that when he gets the chance, he converts it as well, always making those doubting runs. So, I mean, I would definitely not write Vardy off. And, he's definitely an option, I think. And obviously, they've not got a game in 29, which is one of the negatives, though.
Yeah, absolutely. So to answer Luke's question, what I did was he asked, is it weird that he doesn't want to strike because he says he basically there's no value there and it's all about the midfielders and defenders. And what I did was I had a look over the last 6 weeks without City's game this evening, unfortunately, because I couldn't do that before. I looked at the top 10 players and looked at the average points scored per position. I know it's really crude, but come on, it's a quick turnaround pod. And basically, I found this. So over the last six games, the average top 10 player for goalkeepers they scored 33.4 points over the last six, defenders 38, midfielders 43, and forwards just 30. So forwards lagging behind goalkeepers in terms of the top 10 players, their average points scored over the last six game weeks. So it could be, obviously there's six, seven games or so in there. Kane's the top scoring forward over the last six, and he's actually joint 12th over the last 10, level with Mason Mount and Tosin Adarabio. So yeah, interesting. And I'm looking forward to going back to 3-5-2 personally. I've got one more week with Diane, but forwards have been poor. Like, they really have been quite bad. I mean, the likes of Antonio, Bamford, Watkins and Maja, they've only got the mid-20s over the last six game weeks. The fifth place forward, the joint fifth place forward, Werner and Iheanacho, they're not even in the top 50 for the last 6 weeks, which is absolutely crazy. And I guess, Nick, you can see why the defenders carry such real interest. They look really switched on with a sense of clearness and clarity. Fulham, United, and Azpilicueta as well, all in the mix, aren't they?
Yeah, it has been a good period for the defenders. And you often see this, actually, when there's these sort of periods of fixture congestions. It always seems to be the central defenders that do best in the double game weeks, isn't it? But, certainly not this week with City, but otherwise it tends to be. But, I'm not as negative about the forwards. I still think there's a lot of potential in the next few weeks with them. I mean, I made a whole case about how this position, the third striker, died a couple of seasons ago, but then it became sort of reanimated, hasn't it, in the last year with, these new hopefuls from the Championship emerging. You've got the likes of Patrick Bamford appearing, and then, Ollie Watkins, Antonio, Calvert-Lewin as well. But of course, Calvert-Lewin's form has been absolutely dreadful. A lot of people sort of took punts on him over the past few weeks, and he's really failed to deliver after an excellent start to the season. And likes of Bamford as well, failing to deliver in at least most recent weeks. But still, I think there's quite a lot of options in the forward line for game week 29. I'm already tripled up with Maja and Kane and Watkins, but I've still got that sort of FOMO actually in relation to Bamford and Antonio, just because I think they're just going to have huge ownership. And I also like some of the cheaper options as well. You mentioned Dirty Diane, but he's actually had pretty decent stats over the past few game weeks. So Diane and Maggio are sort of third and fourth out of all the forwards right now for goal attempts. And they're quite cheap as well, only 5.5 million for Maggio and 6 million for Diane. So I think you can sort of fill that third slot quite easily with one of those guys. Don't have to go all the way to your Brewsters at 4.5 4, whatever he is now, and rotate maybe. So you switch between a bit of a 4, you know, a bit of flexibility so you can play Madja here and there or Diane here and there. And I know you've kind of been doing that a little bit as well, Tom, in terms of the formations going from 4-3-3 to sort of 3-5-2 and stuff in recent weeks.
Yeah, the man Madja as well, I guess, at 5.5, I mean, he could be one to keep an eye on. Obviously, early days for him in the Premier League after stepping up from Sunderland. But Fulham, and I think we'll speak about this again a little bit, I guess they've got that motivation at the moment, a bit between their teeth. And obviously, Man City next, you wouldn't be too interested. But between 29 and 32, and they've got a blank in 33, they've got Leeds at home, Villa away, Wolves at home and Arsenal away. So an okay set of fixtures there, and he could be at 5.5 generously priced enough that he could sub in and out of your front eight as needed. So yeah, another interesting character there, which I know you've always take a shine to, Nick. You put him in your team, didn't you, a little while ago, the old snake from the Sunderland days. That links nicely into the 29ers Redux. So Jimmy at FPL Claret asks, what's the sensible balance between 29 blankers and players with just two sets of transfers left until then? And James Carroll, friend of the pod, asks, if these players are going to be long-term or if they're anywhere, you know, looking in to service the fixture, you know, going to bin off afterwards. I guess many will say, I decided for 29 that something has to change. And, you know, we've spoken about Aubameyang already. I think he's likely to come in and probably be kept in. Arsenal's run, you know, 29's West Ham, first Liverpool. Okay, not great. But between then and the end of the season, they only played Chelsea in game week 36 of the traditional top six. I guess maybe West Ham as well. So you mentioned Antonio, Nick there. I've got him and I got him as longer term sort of pick. I may even get your man Crespo, Nick, as well, probably in game week 29. Because West Ham's end of season, it's okay. I mean, they do play Chelsea and they do play Arsenal 29. But between game week 30 and 38, it's again quite a decent run, especially in game week 34 and 38, Burnley, Everton, Brighton, West Brom and Southampton. So if they're, you know, on the razz and really looking to get into that top four, they'd be okay. But the one I want to ask you about, Nick, is Leeds. I mean, Bamford and your man Dallas, they're going to be, you know, they may have left some squads for the double game week, but you know, surely they're going to be really highly owned. And you know, I'm sure you're not getting rid of Dallas, are you? But I mean, would you be happy, you know, are you happy with Bamford? Are you still happy with Dallas? Like, how's that looking?
Yeah, I don't actually have Bamford at the moment. So he's one player that I'll be missing out on just because I'm not really looking to make changes to my forward line. I've already got the three strikers in place. I do have Rafinha, though, and he's one that will stay for me for the next couple. And the Leeds haven't been in brilliant form, looking a little bit tired, but they've certainly got that quite nice fixture in 29 against Fulham and then Sheffield United at home. In 30 as well, and Dallas, he's been a revelation to my side this season. I think he's got about 5 goals now. It kind of he's kind of one of those sort of Luca Dean type players that will get you a 15-pointer one week and then a 1-pointer the next. But he has been excellent, played a lot of the season out of position. So if you don't own him, I'd still be recommending him. And I don't think you do you, Tom? I'd be recommending him as a transfer in, perhaps, and you can keep him for a little while, perhaps, even though after those two fixtures, Leeds fixtures do start to become a little bit tougher. They've got City, Liverpool, Manchester United, so three really tough fixtures after the next couple. So at that point, I do have concerns about being too heavily loaded up on the likes of Leeds and also Triple City and Triple Spurs, just because of the 33 blank. I'm going to have to start looking, even though I'm thinking about bringing in Bale and being tripled up with Spurs. I'm then going to have to start thinking about my exit plans there with Spurs and City. And I think we've got a question about City, and so we'll talk about them in a little bit, but also Aston Villa, another side that I'm going to be tripled up in, who also have a little bit of a fixture shift as well, which is a little bit concerning. So they play Liverpool and Manchester City in 31 and 32 as well. So that is the problem, I guess, in terms of front loading your team too heavily for game week 29. So there are a few other teams as well out there. You know, I'm thinking about going to Brighton maybe for the weekend and looking at one of their defenders, like some of the cheaper options. As I said, I don't like to name names because I get derided, but there's a few cheap options there. at Brighton in defence, and they were looking pretty solid for a little while as well. So that's another team to perhaps look at. But yeah, it is the case that a lot of the teams that play in 29, their fixtures do start to change as well. So that is the risk. And, you know, I still remember what happened with West Brom when we targeted the triple up for a blank game week and it all went complete. It was a complete disaster, as we've referenced many times on this pod before. So that is the risk.
Oh, but that was because of the justice for Brunt moment, wasn't it? Like, neither of us owned Macaulay and Macaulay got that goal. Oh, anyway. I think to answer James Carroll's question, there is one person I'd probably mention that may be in a lot of teams for game week 29, but may leave after that. It is Ollie Barndoor-Watkins. I'm sure he'll make a mockery of me for saying this, but if I owned him, I'd be looking to jump off after 30. Like, the run is indifferent at best, as Nick said, and I think that he's treading the fine line for me, Watkins, between being unlucky and just being a bit poor. And to me, he's looking a little bit more like poor man's Firmino week to week, because there's only so long you can be unlucky before you start to think, are you just a bit of a bad finisher, bro? Cue, of course, back-to-back hat-tricks or something like that. But yeah, I think he'd be the sort of player that I'd be looking to jump off. As Nick said as well, there are a few other options that may not be the best. You know, if you're bringing the Brighton player for St. Potter's little army, I don't know. I think that's very much a play for that game week and then stick on your bench for the rest of the time. You know, like a Dan Burn or something like that. Yeah, it's definitely an interesting ragtag of that. I think it's just a case of saying, well, as long as I can get through the game week, okay. I think my idea is to roll this week and I'll end up with 9 players for that blank, including, you know, covering the highest owned caps. And I think I'll just model through owning most of the players that everybody else owns, you know, like sort of Bamiyang, Kane, Son already in the team, Emi Martinez, you know, like sort of Aina and from Fulham. I mean, Nick, are you doing anything in particular ahead of 29 in terms of your kind of, you know, your transfer plans?
Well, getting to transfers in a bit, but I'm probably going to roll this week anyway, and then I'll have 2-3 transfers to play with in 29. So yeah, I'm looking at the defenders. I'm actually thinking about possibly selling a Manchester City player. And I guess that kind of moves us on to our next question, which is about a weekend off the City. So desperately seeking Dusan asked us, what is the best City selection to have now? 2 defenders and a midfielder, or a pivot to attack, given the greater upside and normally similar rotation risk that we now have in defence. FPL Awesomeo also asked us and said he's thinking about Ederson in goal. Ederson's actually quite an interesting one there. It's not a bad shout, especially considering the rumours of him taking a penalty and being the next one. That's kind of fueled by these comments from Pep. So why not get him in? And he's also being the only one not rotated at the moment. Of course, it means there's going to be some sort of Zach Steffen cameo, isn't there, if you do get him in. But yeah, I think that's a pretty decent shout.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, for me, it's rotation City for City. Right now, the certainty of starts with specific players feels like when Mercury's in retrograde, totally reversed how it was. I want to highlight the brilliant work here done by We Rogue on Twitter. We're following him in dredging the City forums with increasing uncertainty. So even the, you know, the in-depth City watchers who give their kind of lineup predictions week after week, these are, you know, long-term fans who haven't got the FPL bias. So it's an interesting way of seeing who they think is going to play based on their observations of Pep over a long period of time. Even he said today, you know, it's quite sobering that even they couldn't agree who was going to play. And he said the certainty of certain players needs to be reevaluated. Pepper said, of course, he's not considering the title one yet. But we saw with all the memes today about the lineups that you got to be worried about week to week. There's no one who's really safe apart from Man Ederson. I think that if you've got 2 defenders and maybe Gundogan, although he wasn't, he could have got 3 assists and a goal tonight, Gundogan. And maybe I'll keep hold. I'm happy to sell off one of the defenders. So I've got Cancelo, like, he's been binning him in 29, that's for sure. And just accept, you know, Diaz and Gundo, you can get an odd benching or two. It's all kind of priced in as well, isn't it? With Diaz at under 6 when I got him, Gundo at 5.5 by price. I'm happy carrying those players. They're fairly cheap. And the fact that they're not going to be nailed is, as I said, completely priced into what there is. Going forward, I guess, I mean, KDB will get the plaudits. I wonder if, as our friend BNM Matt mentioned earlier on, is Mahrez quite a low-key interesting pick now? He's explosive, as we've seen. He's 20 points over double game week, Nick. You'll have to swallow some no-shows. But as we saw last season and this year, it's kind of happening again. If he's not trusted to play in the Champions League, two games in a row, maybe, you know, maybe we won't see that too often. But, you know, if he's alternating with Sterling as well, I mean, I don't think they can play together. I remember how poor they were that afternoon against United. They're just too selfish. Like, neither, they can't go together. There's got to be a builder on the other wing. Then he could be a really cheeky end-of-season pickup, I guess. I mean, I'm considering him at some point. And Edison as well. I mean, six-point Edison, is this okay? But as you said last week, you're looking at probably a 4-in-10 chance of getting clean from him week to week. The issue is, if he concedes, then he's a two-pointer. And it's, as I've said many times over the last few years, it's a very harsh binary. Unless, of course, that penalty stuff comes to fruition, in which case it's a must-do. I think I'm one of these worth the money. What do you think of all those players, Nick? I mean, is Mahrez a player? Well, no, he'd be far too risky for you, wouldn't he? Let's face it.
Well, I think owning Triple City was good, obviously, through the last double game weeks, just because you had two chances. So if one of your players doesn't play one game, he's more than likely to play the other one. So we saw lots of points with the likes of Mahrez, and he has been playing a lot in the league. He's actually played six games in a row now in the league. But yeah, as I said, City have had three doubles now in the last four game weeks, and they've got two blanks coming up. And I've got John Stones sitting there, and he's basically in sort of like an in-out setup now with Laporte. So he's probably going to be the one that I sell, just because of they don't have a game in 29, they don't have a game in 33. It's probably going to be the case that John Stones only plays football in two of the next six FPL game weeks if Pep follows this format of letting him play every other game. So, you know, I can't carry a guy like that for that long. I can't have this guy who I just don't know if he's not going to start week in, week out, especially if Tuchel starts missing around with Rudiger as well. It just creates too much confusion. And I brought in Cancelo. I'm loath to kind of get rid of him straight away after a solitary one-pointer in his first week in my side. So Stones would probably be the one that does go, and then I get someone else in defence that I can actually trust to play week in, week out. As you said, he is, even though he said the league's not won, it 100% is, and the focus is going to be on the Champions League. So that's when the best players are going to play. So I think for me, the defence is where I'm not really a fan any longer of the two defenders, one midfielder approach. I think you probably can just drop it down to one defender. Diaz is probably the safest of all of them. He seems to just play every single game. He's a machine. But in midfield, I think Gundogan would also be worth holding, just because he's cheap. He's super cheap. And he's also their top scorer this season in the league. He's had 11 goals so far, you know, the surprise pick. But he pretty much plays most of the games anyway. We'll get an occasional rest, I guess. It's just whether De Bruyne being back nullifies his attacking threat and means he has to play a little bit more of a deeper role. But, you know, for the price, it's not too bad. But, yeah, I think certainly players like Mahrez is interesting shouts. I think the likes of Phil Foden, interesting shouts as well. Got a hat-trick of assists tonight. But, you know, you have to face facts that these guys are not necessarily going to be playing week in, week out, and you just have to accept that. And because City do have two blanks as well, I think, you know, it's outside of my risk profile right now to bring in one of these guys.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I think maybe it's one of the lessons to learn for next year that these mercurial characters like Mahrez are ideally suited to double game weeks, because if they don't play in one, they'll play in the other, and you've got that insurance in one week. Whereas, you know, if it's game week one and game week two, then the first game he doesn't play, the second one he does play. It doesn't really help you as much as if it's truncated into the same one. So, yeah, no, interesting. For me, Diaz isn't going anywhere. Gundo isn't going anywhere, as I said. And there's obviously opportunity. If you want to get Kevin De Bruyne in, cool, do it. And it could be, you know, one of those that, I mean, he's shown his elite finishing tonight, three shots on target, two goals. Yeah, you know, it could be a very, very handy differential going forward. I guess that kind of, you know, in terms of transfers that we've been speaking about, links into the next question. It's about prioritisation. So FPL Dempsey says that, you know, many key FPL assets teams, we've been speaking about this, you know, they're prioritising Europe, you know, the Champions League for City, and the Europa League for the likes of Arsenal and Spurs, definitely the Champions League for Liverpool. So he says he's thinking about who to prioritise as wildcard picks, other than teams he could look at. Of course, it's links to us as well as non-wildcarders. And Adam Pritchard asks if West Ham are fixture-proof. I mentioned them a couple of times already, but the likes of Cresswell, Dawson Antonio should surely be cropping up on our list right now. Well, I mean, linking these all together, earlier I mentioned Cancelo is in my team. He's going to go up for Cresswell. I think I'm going to own him. I love Dawson, but I might have a go on Cresswell. And Antonio, of course, is cropping up my team. He's in my team at the moment. But in terms of, you know, general prioritizations, I think real talk, we've not had too much time to go into this one. I think it's fair to say, as it's quick turnaround, but this one feeds into the motivation question. You know, Anthony loves doing his on the beach stuff. And I guess once Anthony's back in a couple of weeks, we'll do a proper look at who is raring to go and who is on the beach in that kind of yearly installment. I guess overall from those pods, though, back in the day, it tends to be, doesn't it, Nick, you know, a good idea to invest in teams who have something to fight for and that momentum to fight for it. I mean, in the past, we've fallen into that trap, haven't we, of buying teams who've got good fixtures, but haven't quite got that motivation to get them there.
Yeah, we have. And the likes of West Ham are having an excellent season. They don't have any European concerns, you know, the likes of Spurs, we're all looking at their assets, but they're still in Europe. They've also got a cup final coming up, and same with Arsenal and a few of those other clubs like City and Liverpool, of course. So, you know, those are clubs that are not going to be looking at the league anymore. They're going to be focused on trophies in Europe and things like that. And West Ham are going to be looking at the league. They're going to be thinking right now, do we actually have an honest chance of finishing the top four? And it's certainly in the reckoning. So, you know, it makes sense, I guess, to target some of their players. And they have done pretty well. One of the other ones that wasn't mentioned is Jesse Lingard, of course, as well. And he's actually unable to play in their next game against Manchester United. But, you know, after that, he's potentially a decent pickup. He's got 4 goals and 2 assists in those 6 games that he's played for the club. Of course, you've got the likes of Suchek as well, super cheap, only costing you 5.3 million. And he's such a threat in the air, isn't he, that he could get a goal out of nowhere anytime. He's actually got 8 goals, which is just ridiculous for sort of a central midfielder, especially someone so cheap in FPL. So, you know, both those guys, I think, are excellent pickups in FPL. I mean, I wouldn't necessarily say that West Ham are fixture-proof. They have struggled in some of the games against the likes of Liverpool in recent weeks and Manchester City as well, they lost against. And their fixture run is actually quite challenging. So they've got United up next, then Arsenal, then Wolves, then Leicester, and then Newcastle and Chelsea. So, yeah, it's a really tough next six for them, actually. So that would put me off. I did think about their defenders, since Cresswell, someone I owned last season, stupidly not this season, even though he's like the top scoring defender at the moment, but that would put me off owning a defender right now, just because I don't see too many clean sheets coming up in the next 5 or so.
I see what you mean. I've been looking at Cresswell just as like a long-term hold sort of thing, or maybe, you know, that's my man Big Mike Dawson. I'll see. I think one team, as I said, we'll come back to this in a future pod, Dempsey, so don't despair. We haven't had too much time, too much research on this one, but we will go into it proper in terms of on the beach in the past. One team I would want to call out here is Chelsea. So, as I said, something to fight for, momentum to fight for it. Got the momentum, unbeaten under Mr. Tickle, I'm going to call him for now, because I keep getting it wrong. And they've also got motivation on 2 fronts. So the team, Champions League, obviously, is motivation. Yeah, I know that. And getting the highest league position, another motivation. For the players as well, as that individual motivation, impressing the manager to be in the team. This year, obviously, he's rotating a lot. And for next year as well, when he finally gets a transfer window to himself. I mean, just mentioned Rudiger quickly. I saw a few people fretting by him not playing. But Mr. Tuchel, I think, said he was just giving him a rest, right? And he looks the key beneficiary of his compatriot coming in. And I think him, Mendy, and Azpilicueta, who we mentioned earlier on as well. I mean, Azpilicueta needs our introduction to season at WTA listeners. We used to say that he famously used to start a game with 1 bonus point because he was just such a bonus hoover. But other than that, it looks like space is up for grabs. I mean, there's a good piece of work by @StatsDanFPL on Twitter. I'll link that below this pod when I put it out. He basically kind of looked at the minutes under Mr. Tickle, and he basically showed that Azpilicueta, Rudiger, Mendy, Kovacic, and Jorginho were the top 5 in terms of being the big winners of the players who were trusted by him. I read a good Athletic article about Kovacic. And Havertz, he said, has missed a lot through injury, but he had a great game against Everton, which he did. He was very, very good. Obviously, we don't know what the manager's going to do, but they've got a really nice run in. And also, Mason Mount, I think another one that I've said a few times I'm going to mention him here. He's joint 12 for points scored over the last six, and he's banned in Europe, which is quite interesting. So he was rested last game, which may feed into that market forces thing. So he should play the Leeds this week and also West Brom in game week 30. Good data too. So he's one to consider if you've got a good team for game week 29 and you've got a luxury transfer to make. Yeah. But game week 30 to 34, they've got West Brom, Crystal Palace, Brighton, West Ham, Fulham. So five very, very good fixtures. I mean, West Ham, but the rest of them are very, very good. So get the right asset or two there and you're laughing. But again, you know, the Champions League, especially if they prevail versus Atleti, could well be one of those, which is a bit kind of meta. But I guess, you know, Nick, Chelsea are one of those teams that if you get the rotation right, you could be in for a lot of points, right?
Yeah, definitely. And there's one other asset I've kind of looked at a little bit at Chelsea, and that's Marcus Alonso. So he's another one that has been rotated. Obviously, Ben Chilwell, who's his competitor for that sort of left-back, left-wing-back position. But it's quite interesting in terms of how the rotation has worked, because Chilwell played against United and Liverpool, which were teams that Chelsea set up a lot more defensively against. So, you know, Alonso's not a particularly good defender in terms of actual defending, but what he's good at is attacking and getting forward and whipping crosses in and scoring goals. So he's become a bit of an FPL. He's one of those classic players, I guess, that's a good FPL player, but not necessarily a great player in real life. And yeah, Alonso's been getting lots of game time since Tuchel came into play. So he played that game against Burnley where he scored at home, got 14 points. He's also been chosen to play against Sheffield United, Newcastle, Spurs and Everton. So it feels like the games where Chelsea are on the attack, Alonso is favoured. And then games where Chelsea are defending, Chilwell's favoured. So looking at those fixtures you mentioned against the likes of West Brom at home and Crystal Palace away, Brighton at home, you know, punting on someone like Alonso, you know, there could be, you know, chance for double figure hauls in there for sure. So he might be an interesting pick as well. But yeah, as you said, lots of rotation in Chelsea, which is the gamble and the risk to a certain extent.
Yeah, looking like a Pep 2.0, isn't he, Mr. Tickle? The final one, just here before we move on to the next question, is Wolves as well, which I think merits a quick mention. Not sure what they're going to be going for, really. Stricken mid-table, and they could well be, you know, that motivation trap we referenced earlier. But those fixtures could be a golden brown halo of hope. 30 to 35. Reads West Ham, Fulham, Sheffield United, Burnley, West Brom and Brighton, with four of six of those being at home. Maybe a case for the likes of, you know, Game Week 1, Bow, Sice, returning on our wild card, something like that. But Nick, the next question, the final question this week is on captains, isn't it?
Yeah, we had a question from Chris O'Heary, who just asked us and said he wasn't sure on the captain this week. He said Bruno is staring him in the face, but West Ham are in form. So, yeah, I guess we're going to have a quick conversation about our captains and our chances as well, sort of segue to the end of the pod. And, you know, I'm probably going to be stupidly boring and target Captain Bruno. I think he's going to have a humongous ownership this particular game week. And West Ham are a very different proposition to season past, but he definitely feels like the obvious captain. I've said before, the obvious captain is obvious, I think. He's probably going to be the boring pick that I go for. But in terms of the other options, you know, you could talk about the Manchester City defenders, maybe. You know, someone like Ruben Dias, there's a strong chance of a clean sheet for City against Fulham. Didn't really work out for City in terms of the double game week targeting defenders. I know a few people took punts on the likes of Dias as a captain for that particular week. But I think against Fulham, you know, there's a strong chance of a shutout. I mean, the other options, I'm digging around, but the likes of Richarlison or even Calvert-Lewin, perhaps home to Burnley, you know, even like we have mentioned Luca Dean on the pod. He'd be certainly someone that would be an interesting punt as well for a home match against Burnley for Everton. Yeah, I mean, you could potentially target a Spurs player like Kane in the North London derby as well. Certainly an option just because of the strong form that he's been in. But yeah, I think for me, it's probably just going to be Bruno. I'm not sure about yourself, Tom. What are you thinking then for the captain?
I mean, after last week's debacle, there's obviously a part of me which is thinking, you know what, just captain the highest scoring player of the last 6 weeks in Bruno and hope that those who have sold are too stubborn to buy back. There's also a part of me which is saying, oh, look, Cancelo didn't play against Southampton. He could be well worth captaining against Fulham, keying into what you said earlier on. I mean, the one I'm looking at, though, is Kane. I'm an Arsenal fan. Yeah, yeah, blah, blah, blah. Let's get through that. All right, trouble stuff. Yeah. But I like his North London derby record. 11 goals and 2 assists in 12 games against us, which could be a really good differential as well, because I think everybody's going to be going for Bruno. And I'm highly considering it and hoping that West Ham can shut out United, who are without a few key men. So no Cavani and potentially no Rashford as well, obviously he went off injured. But again, I guess right back to Dave's question at the start of the pod, I feel like betting against the house has been one of the things that has been a big Achilles heel of mine over the season. And some things will never be different. I mean, you're hoping for a miracle if you're captaining a player against the house. I don't know. I'm not sure. But I guess for me, I'm at 270K. It's probably going to be worth it to be going for these differential captains, as I said in that question, going for that beta captain. And that may well be Kane this week. But as always with captains, it's a real prayer that the FPL gods will let your guy outshine them all. What about transfers, Nick? Who are you looking to be bringing in this week, if anyone at all?
Probably going to roll this week, I think, stick with the guys I've got. But then that will give me 2 free transfers for next week where I might, you know, drive to Brighton for the weekend for one of them and take a punt on someone interesting like Gareth Bale, which will mean I have 10 players as well for that week. So that's my general plan there. What about yourself?
My entire plans basically revolve around one question. Do I give Salah one more chance to score for me? If he does open the door and do the job against Wolves, then maybe he does go out anyway. I think he's dropped enough that it doesn't really matter too much to selling him and buying him back. And of course, there's a Mane option. There's a Jota option we've spoken about. Do I do that? Get rid of him this week for Aubameyang, as I've spoken about, I quite favour him. Or do I leave him against Wolves and then kind of do that transfer in 29? I think I'm going to leave it this week. I think I will. And as I said, I'm not too sure about the captaincy this week. I think at the moment I'm leaning towards Kane. I did initially bust it on Bruno, but given my OR, it's probably worth doing the alternative option. I think that's a lot this week. Nick, I guess we disappear here.
Cool, yeah. No, it sounds like one more chance for Salah for you. For me, it's probably going to be 2 more years before I get rid of this guy, knowing how I've been on him in the recent seasons. But we were Who Got the Assist. Thanks so much for listening. Don't forget to hit that subscribe button if you haven't already. As it was an old school pod as well, we actually did an old school throwback in this one, a theme. So a few of you may have picked up on that. So let us know if you got the dodgy references that were thrown into the pod. And please don't give us some negative reviews in regards to that as well, because we got abused last time we tried to do themes. So hope the older and longer listeners appreciated that anyway. We'll be back next Monday, hopefully joined by Seb Vassell, who's a regular on the Scoutcast, if his internet's working.
Yep, I'm sure a few things we may have said may have set off a silent alarm for some listeners. But we look forward to speaking to Seb, particularly getting his views on Leeds going into the blank too. In the meantime, hope to assist you during this quick turnaround. Have a good weekend. Speak to you very, very soon. Goodbye.
Bye.
Oh, it's a goal. Who got the assist? Who got the assist?
Podcast Network.